It's Tuesday, November 20th, 2012. I'm Jordy Morgan. Welcome to Maritime Morning. Coming up on the program today, a Toronto family is fighting to keep their father alive. They're going all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada in a battle against a hospital medical team that believes the man is in a vegetative state and will not recover. Ethicist and end-of-life specialist Margaret Somerville is going to join us to talk about life and death and who gets to decide. And there's some light on the horizon for RIM, and it may come in the form of BlackBerry 10. There are some folks in Bedford who are working away on this project, and they're cautiously optimistic about really what's going to happen over the next little while. They've been dealing with a lot more bad news than good for the past couple of years, so we'll talk about those employees, we'll talk about the BlackBerry 10, and we'll get some insight from our tech desk analyst, Matt Hartley, and check out the new Wii U as well. But first, Ottawa has rejected pleas for an OxyContin ban. Health Minister Leona Aglukkaq sent a note to her provincial counterparts yesterday saying that they will not interfere with the approval process. It's a bit of a disappointment for Amy Graves, who's been working to get opioids off the street following the death of her brother from an overdose. Well, what does this mean about the supply of OxyContin? And Amy Graves joins us this morning to talk about this on the phone. Hi, Amy.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. What was your initial reaction when you heard that the federal government was not going to interfere with the approval process for the manufacture of generic OxyContin?
I was a little disappointed. Not too surprised, though, because I find that government likes to pass the buck, whether it's the health system passing the buck to the justice system or the federal government passing the buck to the provincial government. It just seems like it's a common thing to do. But I did feel there was a chance that they might interfere due to the changes that they wanted Purdue Pharma to make to the drug OxyContin last March. The minister's scientific advisory panel recommended in March 2011 that the manufacturer of OxyContin update their drug to make it less abusable. And that's how OxyNeo was introduced.
Yeah, I want to talk a bit about that, because while it was introduced because it's harder to crush and snort or to liquefy and inject, OxyNeo was seen as perhaps useful in terms of, I suppose, reducing the abuse of this drug. But in terms of its distribution, we haven't really seen much cooperation on behalf of the federal government or the provincial government, for that matter, in terms of covering the cost of it. So
I agree. I think it's strange. It was almost like they were trying to prove a point, and I understand why some didn't want to approve it on the formulary, because OxyNeo and OxyContin, if you take it and you're a legitimate patient, it has the same active ingredient and it would have the same effect and therefore the same risk of addiction or dependence. So when they look at it from that standpoint, the legitimate users can get hooked just as easy as somebody who is taking the previous form, which is OxyContin. What it does prevent is the abuse, and not completely. I mean, I'm sure people still try to crush them, snort them, and inject them.
Yeah.
It would lower the demand, I guess, the street value. But there's so many other opioids out there for people to abuse. I don't think it's not the silver bullet that's going to solve anything. But, I mean, we have to start somewhere. Somebody has to stop and say, listen, there's something going on here. In the Globe and Mail, there was an article today that 1,000 people a year die in Canada of oxycodone misuse. That's just the one drug that we're talking about, the active ingredient in OxyContin. 1,000 people a year in Canada. So there's obviously an issue, and I think the government's really focusing on the whole patent issue, the business perspective. You know, if we don't allow generics, then it's not going to be good competition. But do we really want a market flooded with good competition and low prices on a drug that's already proven to devastate communities and provinces?
Yeah. This is, I guess, where I'm a little confused about this from a public policy point of view. I'm just wondering if we're having the right debate, because what they're saying here is that they don't want to get in the way of these being made available. You can understand, though, that there are doctors and there are patients out there who legitimately use these to deal with chronic pain that would want to see this generic version on the market. But is there, I mean, is the larger issue of whether or not we should be looking at these opioids in general, is it being missed somehow?
Oh, it's definitely comes down to prescribing. I think if every doctor was prescribing responsibly and prescription monitoring was doing all its proper checks and balances and everybody was doing their due diligence, then no, we probably wouldn't have this problem. But the reality is that those things aren't happening. And actually, the drug OxyContin itself, the makers Purdue Pharma, were criminally convicted in the United States for misadvertising their product. When it first came out, they promoted it for moderate to severe pain, not people in the hospital who are dying of cancer, not people who are in severe car accidents who just need it for a short amount of time. It was marketed for chronic pain, which there's very little evidence that it's suitable. A lot of the tests and stuff they do with these opioids for chronic pain only last like 6 weeks sometimes. So how do we really know how effective? There's many doctors that are starting to come out of the woodwork now in Canada and the U.S. saying, you know, these should not be prescribed for moderate pain. We need to go back. There's many drugs you can prescribe, and there's lower dose opioids too. I mean, we see hydromorph cotton and OxyContin prescribed for so many pain ailments that maybe a Tylenol 3 or something a little less addictive could be used and it would be suitable.
We're talking with Amy Graves. Amy's brother died as a result of taking some drugs he wasn't aware of. Coming to light again because the federal health minister, Leona Aglukkaq, said yesterday she's not going to block generic versions of OxyContin from coming onto the market. What did you think of the federal government's position here, though? I know that you were a little bit disappointed, but is it the role of the federal government to withhold approval for drugs because of or out of fears of abuse? I mean, is it the federal government that should be doing that, from your opinion? Should they be the ones that are guiding this thinking?
I don't even think, though, that it comes down just to the abuse and misuse. I think we have to look at all the legitimate patients that start out with a prescription for chronic pain or sore shoulder, and then they, in turn, turn into dependent people who...
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you here, but I guess the question is, because... Well, we can be disappointed with a federal decision. Should politicians be picking which drugs get approved? I mean, OxyContin is, I guess, by all accounts, is a safe drug. That's how it's being characterized anyway. So is it really the role of the federal government to say, no, we shouldn't be approving this for generics? Or is who do you think needs to take responsibility for these things being on the street?
Well, I mean, the federal minister has the last say, and under the Food and Drug Act, the minister is supposed to be satisfied with any drugs, including generics, and they must meet safety and effectiveness standards prior to issuing on approval. And basically, they're supposed to be able to they're supposed to be more beneficial than harmful to the patient. And my view is that these drugs, even... when used as prescribed, because our guidelines are so askew. As prescribed can mean so many different things to so many different doctors. Doctors mm-hmm. have so much discretion. It is a hard choice, but I don't think any certain politician should be able to ban drugs for approval. But, I mean, if the minister is the one who signs on the dotted line that something, you know, has met the standards of the Food and Drug Act and this is safe for our public, well, she does have some clout in that situation and some say. No, I don't think just any health minister or group of politicians should be able to... ban drugs or prevent them from coming into the market. But also, I mean, OxyContin, this is an unusual situation. Maybe we need a precedent set. There hasn't been, I don't think, a drug on the market that we've had such adverse reactions with. If she doesn't have the power and it's not in the framework of the laws, then maybe we need to adjust those for special circumstances like this.
But you're not, I don't get the sense that you're laying this at the feet of the politicians, that this sounds to me like you're still more concerned about the way that doctors are prescribing this.
Oh, most definitely. I think if we want to see real results and we want to see a positive impact, no, I don't think banning generic OxyContin is going to solve the issue, because there's so many other opioid narcotics on the market that if a doctor is not prescribing responsibly, and let's say generic OxyContin is banned, then they will just move to a hydromorphone, a Dilaudid, hydromorph cotton, morphine, fentanyl. I mean, I could list them for days, Percocet. And that's also when people say, oh, well, if we ban generic Oxy, then people will be in pain. People will suffer. I disagree with that. There's a cocktail of narcotics on the market right now, hundreds to choose from. It is a sticky situation, like you said, how, you know, if the health minister bans this drug, then, you know, what precedent is going to be set? But everybody, I think, needs to get on the same page and stop passing the buck.
Well, this is what I heard that Nova Scotia's health minister, he was saying that he was disappointed because of Ottawa's decision, because he felt that if they had a delay, they could examine how oxycodone is being abused. Do we need more time to examine this, do you think?
Oh, for sure. It wouldn't hurt. Like I said, research is minimal for long-term effects of this drug. And it's not just the abuse. Many of these people were legitimate pain patients, and that's what we have to look at, too, is that it's not just the people who are going out and buying them off the street that are affected. Fred Zwicker from the W5 episode that aired here in the Annapolis Valley, he was a perfect example. He had 1,200 pounds of bottled water fall on top of him. Half his body was crushed. I mean, he was a legitimate pain patient who started with a prescription from his doctor for the right reasons. And he must have had a predisposition to addiction, maybe, that had never been uncovered. And as soon as he started taking that medication, his body couldn't go without it. It was, you know, how people say with crack, cocaine, and heroin, after your first hit, you're addicted. A lot of these opioid medications are the same way. People don't even know that they have a predisposition until they get an injury or they are in pain, and then they start this and they can't stop. So I really do think it's not just the abuse and misuse issue, like the federal health minister likes to say. It's really the legitimate pain patients that we need to worry about, too.
Amy, it's always an interesting topic, and I know that it's not one that's going to go away anytime soon. We appreciate your perspective on it always. Thanks so much.
Thanks. Take care.
Amy Graves joining us this morning. Amy's been active in trying to get opioids off the street. What do you think of the federal government's decision here, and do you think that the province is passing the buck on this? They're saying that they wanted to delay so that they could examine how oxycodone is abused. The province saying that now they'll have to continue to work to bolster their own addiction services because of the result of this, and the result that OxyContin may be, I suppose, more available or more easily available because there's a generic version that it's on the way out. 405-6000 or 877-801-8255 is our number here. That's 405-6000, 877-801-8255. Do you think there are things that we can be doing to try and get opioids off the street that we're not doing? Give us a call. 405-6000, 877-801-8255. This is Maritime Morning. So the feds have rejected provincial pleas to delay or deny approval of a generic form of OxyContin. That's a painkiller. It's addictive. It's been widely abused in a lot of small towns, remote First Nation reserves. I think we've had our fair share of abuse here in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. Leona Gluka says that Ottawa will tighten licensing rules so the distributors of OxyContin have to keep better track of where the drug goes. How do you feel about this decision? Do you think that they should have delayed it so that we had more time to deal with it? Ian from Waverly joins us this morning. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. I think you heard Amy Graves there talking about this. What are your thoughts on it?
I did, and all due respect to Amy Graves, I think that the minister did really do something that was the only thing that was the only option that was really allowed to her. It's a very, very slippery slope that she's standing at the top of, and if she had gone that way, then you've set a horrible precedent. politicians shouldn't be dabbling in drugs, I don't believe. The other thing is that apparently because of pressure from governments, the company that actually invented or developed OxyContin and patented it,
Purdue Pharma, yeah.
They've reconstituted it so that it doesn't lend itself as easily to abuse. Now, that having been said, I am wondering whether the government has actually allowed them to extend their patent because of the changes that they have made, because they've made it apparently out of the range of anybody else. So that may be the case, and it may be a good thing, perhaps. And the other thing is that OxyContin, or all generic drugs, apparently are not necessarily as efficacious as the brand name drugs. Although we are told this, apparently, if you actually research it, you'll find that the guidelines are apparently up to 80% of the effect. And the only reason I know this is I have a friend of mine who had some serious health issues and was dealing with generic drugs, which just created a huge health problem. But when the name brand drugs were reintroduced, the problem went away.
Hmm.
So, it's a tough call for the minister, I'm sure. And all due respect to Amy and her and the tragedy that she was involved in, but I really don't think that the minister should up and out just do that, because of the other side of the coin,
yeah,
the amount of good which is actually done by some of these drugs.
Thank you, Ian, very much for your comments on this morning. Lyle has been standing by and wanted to weigh in on this as well. Lyle, what did you think of Amy's comments, and what do you think of this idea of the federal minister not putting hurdles in the way of generic OxyContin?
I think there's several different looks at this. When you look at the fact of she's talking about addiction to prescription drugs, but that's just a misnomer. You're addicted to drugs. You're not addicted to prescription drugs. Any use of prescribed drugs outside of a medical induced, like
therapeutic use,
is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
85 to 90% of all the illegally used prescription narcotics on the street are due to warehouse theft and sold on the black market. They're not due to overprescription doctors being overly willing to prescribe drugs without having taken all the pros and cons into effect. Another certain percentage of it has to do with theft within the family, people stealing the drugs from their relatives or elderly relatives and going to pill parties, but that's quite minor. Use of prescription drugs on the street is huge, and the biggest reason why it's huge is because if you happen to be addicted to drugs and you have a choice, you can take this pill where you know exactly what's in it, you know it hasn't been tampered with, or you're reasonably sure it hasn't been tampered with, and you know what result you're going to get out of it, you're going to take it, as opposed to take this ball of black tar heroin or this 8-ball of cocaine or this any other street drug, which everybody who's had their hands on it needs to make a little bit more money on it, so they need to cut it a little bit more, so you don't know exactly what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
That with those factors in light, the two things that the provincial and federal government could do is, one, they can make it a lot more, they can put the onus on the actual makers and distributors of the drugs, legally the distributors of the drugs and manufacturers, to say you have to keep better control over your distribution process, you have to have higher security, you have to make sure these things aren't getting stolen.
Mm.
The second thing, and the biggest thing, if you're worried about the overprescription aspect, is I'm not laying blame on this particular government, but a government will say, provincially in New Brunswick, put forth a plan so that all the pharmacies within the province could communicate with each other. So if John Smith or Jane Doe had a prescription for a controlled substance, they went to a pharmacy and they said, all right, this is the first time this has been filled. If they go to a second pharmacy and trying to fill it early, they can look and say, well, you should still have 10 pills of this left. What happened?
Yeah.
No, and there goes your red flag.
Yeah, very, very good point. Thank you very much, Lyle.
I know you got to go, but $4 million of that plan had been put forth. The plan was axed with less than $1 million left to go. They wasted $4 million in a huge public safety factor.
Well, it's a very good point, and clearly something that needs to be examined much more closely in terms of the information and how it's being shared in the provinces. That is, it's just another example of that whole information sharing process that has to be improved within the healthcare system that would go a long way to solving a number of different problems. We have a newscast coming up in just a couple of minutes. Eric is going to be by here in Halifax, and you'll get your newscast in New Brunswick as well. Then we're going to talk in the next half hour about end-of-life issues. Margaret Somerville is going to join us and talk about a family in Toronto who are trying to keep their father alive while doctors are saying that they feel it is a waste of time, essentially. And they're going to the Supreme Court to do it. We'll talk about that next here on Maritime Morning.